If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I was a big deal in those days. At least as much of a big deal as I could be in high school. I was the star of my school's football team. My girlfriend was the hottest girl in class. And I was driving a Ford Mustang March 1st, 1969. One of the finest cars in the world. And it was all mine, thanks to a scout checking me out at one of our football games. Big talks of a scholarship with my name on it. I didn't know how much potential I had until my dad turned to me after talking to the scout with this excited glint in his eyes. That week, a black muscle car was parked in our driveway. My dad said it was mine. Times were different in the 70s. I got my license when I was 16. I knew some kids who got theirs when they were only 15. Anyway, I was cruising through town all day that day with my father. One of my happiest memories. If anyone in the school didn't know my name by then, they all did when they heard the roar of that Mustang's engine when I arrived. Yeah. I was a bit of a douche in high school, but those who knew me also knew I was one of the nicest guys. My friend Clint said it was because I was very slow at times, which a lot of people found cute. I don't really care what they thought, as long as they knew I wasn't some thug, despite my looks. I enjoyed having friends. Anyways, I tell you all of this because something big was going to happen. The entire class, about 50 17-year-old teenagers, were about to go on a camping trip. Tall trees, mountains, warm fields baking in the sun. Situated near a river with a large camp with log cabins, a few fire pits, and even an outdoor cafeteria under a thatch roof. Not to mention the activities they had set up, even a classic obstacle course. Of course, it was a big deal. Even if we were almost technically adults, we still had that childish energy in us. We were thinking about swimming in the river, competitive camp games like tug-of-war, sneaking off after lights out with our girlfriends, and of course, impressing anyone somehow during that trip. Whether it was winning a foot race, or pull-up contest, or scoring in the bushes. We talked about all of this after the school announcement in the boys' locker room. "Nick, are you driving down there in the Mustang?" Clint asked me. "Of course," I said. "Sally and I are going together." "So, mind if I hitch a ride with you guys?" Clint asked in a hushed tone, looking around at the other guys. "Forget it. There's no room." "But you have four seats," Clint yelled. Everyone laughed. "Yeah, that's where our things go," I told him. "Put it in the trunk." I put my hand on top of his head and shook him around a little. "Then where should I put the beers?" I told him. There was a few cheers when the guys heard this. "Speaking of which, I am collecting cash so my big bro can get the beer. Anyone interested in getting on this, pay up. The more you give, the more beer the selection." Some pay up there and some paid later. Some made orders and put a little extra in. You have to understand that our entertainment was very limited compared to today. The movies had it right. Alcohol and sex were on our minds. Very little else, truth be told. We were very organized when it came to setting up a party, at least most of the time. Well, if you're bringing beers, then I guess I could ride the bus for a few hours, Clint said, suddenly very amiable. Still, next time, pal. I parked outside Clint's house and angrily set the handbrake in place. I watched him practically skip out of the house with a pack on his back. After putting his things into the back seat, Clint opened the passenger door and hopped in the Mustang. "Hit it, lover boy," he said. "Shut the hell up," I snapped. All he could do was laugh as we set off. "Hey, I'm sorry Sally got sick," Clint said, twisting the cap off his soda bottle. He was very careful with it after I glared at him. "Yeah, me too," I muttered. We listened to the radio in silence. I stopped at a gas station before heading to school. I needed to fill up the tank in a jerry can, always good to have a little extra for long trips. Clint kept slapping his legs to the tune, like some anxious drummer who really needed the jam. He got really energetic when he had sugar. I was glad when we got to confront we were present and ready to follow. A few teachers weren't happy with me driving to camp, but when you have no real black marks on your record, your parents' permission, and the football coach heading the field trip, they really couldn't do anything. I was still more than a little frustrated. As we drove, I decided to break the silence by venting what was going through my head. Sally didn't seem sick when I talked to her the day before. I heard through the grapevine that her ex was also staying behind. Sally had a track record for choosing bad guys and cheating. She was one of those follow-your-heart type girls. I was prepared to give that trip a skip on that alone, but with a trunk full of alcohol that others paid for, I just felt obligated to go. My father also said something that bothered me. "Stand by her as long as she stands by you," he began. "And when you have nobody to stand by your values, no matter how much it hurts." I had have happily taken lies and unfounded guarantees over some be the bigger man wisdom. "Do you think that she'll cheat on you?" Clint asked as I told him this. "I don't know. I'm not special," I said. "I'm not her first. I'm not..." "Don't start with that bull," Clint said, easing back into his seat. He really knew how to make himself comfortable. "If she screws up what she has with you, she's an idiot. You'll be better off without her, but she sure as hell wouldn't be better off without you." "I'd still be the idiot who trusted her." "You've always been the idiot, Mr. Football Scholarship," Clint said. I thumbed the side of his arm. "No offense, we all have our strengths. Anyways, your dad is right. You don't know if she's gonna do anything, so try not to think about it." "Whatever." "And they may not look it, but those other girls are something else," Clint said. "Her loss is another's gain." "What girls?" Clint pointed to the school bus in front of us. The black window wasn't the cleanest, but I could see a group of girls at the back waving at us. Clint leaned forward and turned up the music as loud as it could get. The girls whooped and raised their arms, but then suddenly faced forwards before sitting down in their seats. "Bet you that was Miss Weaver that shouted at them," Clint said, turning the music down. "Crazy bitch should have been left behind." I spent the rest of the trip watching Clint and one of the girls at the back of the bus meme an entire conversation, him saying things that made me laugh. If she could have heard him, she would have kicked his ass. We took a narrow, wavy road into camp. It wasn't too bad for the Mustang, but the bus struggled. At least somebody had thought ahead and cut back branches. I could see piles along the road and the flat stumps sticking out of the trunks they had left behind. When we reached the spot, I parked the Mustang beside the bus. Clint and I grabbed our bags and joined the roll call. We were divided into different cabins. 2 girl cabins, 3 boy cabins. There certainly wasn't a shortage either, but I guess only some of them were prepared for us. After stowing our things, we were given a rundown of camp activities and the schedule they had set.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Out for us. Looking back, I realize now that the whole camp thing was just to make the school look good. A photo opportunity to show off to the parents and get more enrollments. I wouldn't have cared even if they had made it obvious. Looking at that schedule, I just noted the free time they gave us. Morning, midday, and evening. Except for the 5th day, which was a stargazing astronomy lesson. Bleh. I used the first free slow to talk with one of the guys before we went to our assigned cabins. The plan was simple. Get the booze in the evening, conceal it in our bags, and then hide it in the cabin. There were only a few teachers and a couple of hired instructors. There weren't any room checks, nothing. These were lenient adults who wanted to enjoy their time there as much as we did. I wouldn't have been surprised if Coach Sykes brought his own booze. 1 or 2 from every cabin, Clint said. Bring empty bags. We can't all go to the Mustang. People will definitely notice. What time? Somebody asked. Late, after midnight, I said. We gotta make sure the teachers are asleep, so midnight is a good time. With the plan set, I was part of 6 guys that would hike back up to the bus and Mustang. I wasn't about to lend someone the keys to my car just so they could open the trunk. Besides, seeing as if it was my car, I would get in trouble anyways if things went to hell. Stop crowding the window, I told the guys in my cabin. We have to keep a lookout, Nick, one said. If you're caught, we ain't getting a drink the rest of the week. Shut up, I said, sliding the window shut. I'll get the dang beer. Tensions were high. The first 2 nights of our stay were screwed. One of the girls, that first night, swore she saw something in the woods and screamed, which set the teachers off thinking there was wild animals. Big deal, right? It's the forest. There's bound to be a few animals. A fact that didn't keep her from screaming her head off. It was a big joke the next day, but she wasn't laughing. The night after that was screwed thanks to a pair of lovebirds who crossed right by in front of one of the teacher's cabins. Big mistake. For that one, Coach Sykes kicked in every door at the guys' cabins and lectured us on late-night walks in the forest. When I regrouped with the others outside the cabin, we walked deep into the forest before rounding out towards the car. We kept the distant lights of the cabin in sight, just in case we lost our way. We were also far enough that we could talk on our walk. Got some news, guys, Clint said, grabbing one guy by the back of the neck, one of the lovebirds from the night before. Our buddy here got caught last night. Tell us something we don't know, one guy interrupted. Shut up. He got caught last night with his girl going for a stroll. What he failed to mention was that he wasn't going someplace with his girl. Oh, no, no. They were, in fact, returning from their little rendezvous, Clint said, followed by his best French laugh. Bull crap. Did he tell you that? No. This little bit of information came from Abigail, who, get this, thanked him for a wonderful night right outside the girl's cabin this morning. You heard? The lovebird said. Three cheers for Stanley and Abigail tomorrow, Clint continued, patting Stanley's shoulder. For now, pay the stupid bastard back for almost costing us a great booze heist. Clint smacked the back of Stanley's head, followed by the rest of us who had a few soft hits in. With that matter settled, we cracked jokes and continued our climb up the hill. We soon found the familiar path that we took down the camp and stuck to that. It was slow going. You'd be surprised how dark it could get, and we weren't about to use flashlights. Luckily for us, the bus was easy to spot in the dark, so we stumbled over to it and approached the trunk of the Mustang. After unlocking the trunk, we started to pack our bags with cans of beer. Why cans? One guy asked. Bottles make noise, I told him. Although I have a brandy bottle here for Max, who felt like being a little extra. Which cabin is Max in? Mine. Hand it here, another said, taking it. Frickin' brandy. Frickin' brandy, we all repeated. Max always has to be special, huh? Well, he better share. We're not going to be able to take everything, Clint said. That's fine, I said. We missed the first two nights, so it works out. I closed the trunk and locked it. We tightened our packs and prepared ourselves for the walk back. It was going to be a lot harder. Liquid tends to slosh about, making balance tough. It would take even longer. Unfortunately, going slow was no longer an option. Near the path we took, we saw a flashlight. It bobbed with the person's movement, and for a moment we just stared at it. Then the light turned to us. Silently, we all turned to the forest and ran, knowing that if we said anything, our voice might be recognized. We had to leap over a short fence the vehicles were parked in front of. I could tell that a few of us had tripped over it. I heard glass break and another utterance of, "Frickin' brandy!" before we took the tumble down. Loose leaves, tall grass, and twigs. I could tell we had entered the deeper forest when the grass thinned out, and all I heard was the crunch of twigs and leaves. I didn't run for no more than 10 seconds before I noticed how quiet it got. I focused on making distance. Running with that weight on my back didn't faze me much. I'd been running with weights like this as part of my exercise routine. You need strong legs to play football. I started to veer to my left, knowing I needed to head back to the cabin. I was about to say the same to the others when I realized why it was so quiet. I didn't hear any other footsteps. The others must have separated, which was a smart move. It just seemed that I was the only one that ran so far before deciding to turn back to the cabin. I cursed when I realized that whoever was checking out the parking lot could go back to the cabins and make sure everyone was accounted for. If the others made it there before me, great. But how would they explain me and my pack missing? I kept running. A few minutes later, I saw the distant light of the camp. I slowed down to catch my breath and began creeping back to my cabin. If I moved too fast, someone might notice. Basic sneak-in-the-dark rules that everyone should know, which is why you should never scan the darkness. You linger in spots to notice the small changes. Before I got close, I heard something. A repetitive beating sound, growing louder. A steady sense of thumps and footfalls. Then all I heard was a growl as something collided with my side, knocking the wind out of me. I could barely catch my breath before I felt this pressure on my back and a vicious pulling. All I heard was snarling, and that weight was making it difficult to get air back into my lungs. I heard fabric rip as my pack was torn open. I heard claws on the cans, and then something crunched. I felt something wet hit the back of my head, and then I heard the hiss of the bear spray out of the can. The pressure lifted for a moment, but the snarling remained. It got closer to my ear. I could feel the breath hit the back of my neck. I could hear it sniffing and growling soon after. Just as it did before, it bit onto one of the beer cans. Light. A flashlight beam crossed through the trees, hitting me before going somewhere else. The pressure lifted off my body, and I heard something running. I rolled over quickly to see something moving between the trees. It was massive. A dog-like creature that bounced from tree to tree before sprinting off into the darkness. I stayed still in the shadow of the tree. I heard the footsteps of someone. Whoever they were, they stopped just before my tree. The flashlight scanned back and forth over the forest before they turned around and walked back to camp. I steadied my breathing again, and when I thought they were out of earshot, the feeling of panic took a lot longer to settle. When I thought it was safe, I got everything together and made my way back to the cabin. I took my time not just to be careful, but because I kept looking back. I reached up and knocked on the window. It slid open. Hands came out to take the pack, and then they helped me back inside the cabin. In the dark, I got plenty of pats on the back. I was the last one, but no alarms were raised. Mission successful. "What happened to your pack?" someone asked. "Did you catch it on something?" "Looks like you already started. Two cans are missing," another said. The mood was too good and I was too disoriented to tell them anything. I decided not to say anything, but I was grateful it was dark. I didn't want them to see my face. That night was a mini party, as was the fourth night of our camping trip. Some booze slipped into one of the girls' cabins, but I wasn't complaining. I just tried to relax as best as I could after that. Being the camp hero, I had plenty of beer to help with that, but otherwise, we were all fairly calm and quiet. On the fifth day, Clint shouldered me. "One of the cabins has gone dry," he said. "Max is one. I guess he needed the stronger stuff to keep him from overdoing it." "Too bad," I said. "I'm not going to get more. Screw Max." "Yeah, my thoughts exactly," Clint nodded. "Besides, it's the last night. No chance of slipping past the teachers tonight, especially Coach Sykes."
"What do you mean?"
"Stargazing tonight," Clint said. "Remember? We're going for a night hike to the clearing to get a good look. Maybe I could smuggle some of my..." I stopped listening to him. I was busy thinking up excuses. The best excuse I could come up with was food poisoning. Not the blow chunks into the toilet, but the painful stomach-imploding kind that made it difficult to go on hikes in the dark. Coach Sykes immediately saw that his best football player needed some rest and recovery, so he gave me a few pills and told me to hit the sack. Miss Weaver, however, would stay behind and keep an eye on things. She didn't want to leave one student behind at the camp while everyone else was at the hike. I think she was going to stay behind anyways. She was a little too old for it all as well. I didn't care. I just holed up in my cabin and breathed a sigh of relief. I saw her make the rounds, walking mostly between the cafeteria and the female teacher's cabin. I see her stop at some point to look out towards the river and the mountain behind it, smoking a cigarette. I couldn't really see her figure, but I could see the glow of the cigarette tip now and then. I joined her with my relaxation ritual. A few cans of beer were close by. I thought about the trip back home. Clint would be riding shotgun. I knew that much. But I wondered if the extra fuel from the Jerry would be enough. I tried recalling a gas station along the way. I crushed a beer can into a flat disc and added it to the rest. We would get rid of it all in one shot. Couldn't leave any easy-to-spot cans lying around. With these mundane thoughts circling my mind, I decided that I was preoccupied as well as liquored up enough. It was time to get some sleep. I went to bed and waited for sleep to take me. I then heard the footsteps of someone walking outside. Looking up to glance through the gap in the curtains, I saw the familiar glow of the cigarette. I was about to lower my head when the shape shifted and a second glow appeared. Two fiery sparks in the darkness that weaved from side to side. I didn't quite understand what I was looking at. That's when the figure left the darkness so painfully slow. Creeping, not too different from the way I did when I was approaching the cabin from grabbing the booze. As the cool light of the night hit my body, the shape confused me more. At first, I saw an arm, but it was dark and misshapen. The fingers weren't that long. The legs themselves appeared crouched, yet the figure was tall. As it stepped fully into view, I saw that the misshapen parts of its body were merely clumps of hair that seemed to stand amongst its already hairy form. The fingers weren't long for its size, but its claws made up for it. The eyes lost their red ting, becoming black beads that caught the light, but even the darkness seemed to dim that glint. It was a monster. A wolf-like creature standing on its back legs, its body an ugly, demonic mix between man and dog. Yet its face was that of a hound with white teeth, gnarled, as I could see a few poking out from behind its back lips. As it approached, it must have seen me. It must have seen me see it. Why else would it walk so slowly? Yet why did its eyes follow mine? Maybe it knew I saw it and just didn't care. It knew that there wouldn't be any interruptions this time. It knew I was alone. If it could smile cruelly, I felt it did just before it dropped to all fours and ran towards the cabin. I was helpless. Despite my size, despite my strength, I couldn't do anything. I saw the glass shatter as if it weren't really there. A window to me, a bothersome cobweb to it. Darkness filled my vision, and in that darkness, its eyes became like fire once again. I saw teeth. I felt claws dig into my skin. I remember grabbing a bed frame. I felt teeth sink into my left leg. It hurt, but I felt true pain when the teeth reached my bone, and I could feel the crunch. The grating of bone on bone. I was screaming all the time, but I knew that help wouldn't reach me in that second. The creature tried to pull me out the window. It got my leg hung over the window. It started to tug at my leg. I heard nothing but ringing and my heart pounding. I dropped to the floor of the cabin, but I didn't feel it. I stared at the broken window and the wet blood gleaming on the windowsill. I raised my eyes to look at the sky, and then I passed out. I woke up in an ambulance, I think. The sun was up. A beam of light gleamed through the windshield and straight into my eyes. With the light of my eyes, everything looked dark, highlighted with gold. "He's awake," a guy behind me said. "Thank God," the driver said. "I will let Aurora know." "Hey kid, how you feeling?" the man behind me asked. Before I could answer, he continued speaking. "If you feel a little bit weird right now, that's just the drugs taking effect. If you want to rest, you can. We will." I didn't have much choice. I could feel my eyes roll back and then my head drop. I was out again. The next time I woke up was 2 days later, post-surgery. I woke up with family around me. There was a certain kind of sadness that still teared me up inside when people look at me. Yet it didn't hurt as much as the expressions my family wore as they sat by my hospital bed. My father especially. My leg had been amputated, at least partially. A lot of it was already missing, according to my family. The doctor explained the rest to me alone. I will spare you gory details, but tried to save as much as they could in surgery, but it wasn't going to happen. Looking down at my left leg was surreal. I just couldn't believe it. Maybe my mind was just preoccupied with something else. I received flowers from Sally, but she never showed up. Turns out my bad feelings about her were founded. She just felt guilty enough to make an empty gesture. When Clint told me that little bit of news, it was like a drop in the ocean. I just told him to forget it when he suggested a little revenge. I just didn't care. And sure, losing my leg was life-changing. I didn't get my football scholarship gone, but the university I was speaking to just gave us a sort of half-scholarship thing. It meant I needed better grades, and my parents had to pay more than they would, but at least it still wasn't the full price. I will never know what I could have become. What I am now is nothing more than a glorified manager at a car dealership. I spend most of my days at a desk, just getting on with life. And it's not bad, like I said. I get those looks. And those who know me can't help but look a certain way when they see me. Even as I look at my leg now, my thoughts aren't filled with what could have been, even though there is plenty of that at times. All I think about is that creature. That man-dog thing. It changed everything inside my head. It ruined my life. The life I could have had. But it also broke something else inside me. It took something inside of me. Because I hear it. I hear it every time I'm close to falling asleep. My heart aches with fear. I feel powerless all over again. I know it's not in my city, let alone outside my windows. But I still check. Every single night.